As you can see, our topic this morning is overweight, which might be offensive to people like me. But I've got to start off, I'll kind of relate to you a story that maybe kind of put things in perspective. When I was farming, we raised some watermelons. We raised those for seed, about 300 acres every year. And my dad and I decided we needed a newer harvester. The one we'd used was old and junky and wasn't even ours. So we designed a new one, took all the things we knew and put together a new one, had a local mill right there build it. Well, some of you probably had some experience having things built or made, and sure enough, they were way behind schedule when it come harvest time, and we weren't quite ready. So we rushed that thing to the field, knowing it wasn't ready, trying to use it, trying to get the harvest done, and we needed some parts. Change some different gears, do things a little different. We had no trial run. We had no idea. So we had a local spray pilot there that also had a Bonanza airplane, and the parts we needed happened to be in Colorado. So my dad and him load up in that airplane, and they fly up there. And they get up there, and they got boxes of gears and stuff to load in this Bonanza airplane. And if you know anything about flying, you know there's certain amounts of weight that you can and can't handle. Not only that, there's certain places you can put that weight and expect to fly. So they sit there on the runway and figured the temperature, the altitude, how much fuel they had, and the pilot was a real slow-talking older guy, and he said, this is going to be close. And my dad said, kind of a little worried about that, because when they flew in, he said they flew over these trees and high lines and stuff and just landed right there. And on the way out, they're going to have to fly right back down that runway and try to get up over those trees and high lines. And he said he figured and figured and figured. And finally he said, all right, put this here. We can load that, whatever. And he said, we take off down the runway. And he said, this thing's not getting in the air at all. And he said, and this old guy, the pilot, looks at him and he says, you got your boots on? My dad said, yeah. He says, throw them out. So there's just places that you can have some weight, and there's places you can't. And in our Christian life, there's no place for extra weight. If you will, let's turn to Hebrews 12 and verse 1. It says, wherefore, seeing we are also compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Let's look at this. Weight, beset, and patience. Those are kind of the key words that I want you to kind of look at here. But you know, there's a lot of things in our lives that may not necessarily be sin. And I think that's what this is saying here. Because it says, lay aside the weight and the sin. I'm not sure they're exactly the same thing. Okay? So there are things in our lives that hinder us from running the race, from finishing the race that we've all chose to run. Now, weight here is an encumbrance. It's something that just holds you back, something that makes it difficult. Beset, that is only used one time in the New Testament, and that means like surrounded by. So you have these weights, these things that surround you, that are in your life, that hinder you from running the race. And finally, this word patience would be translated endurance. So you have to not only run, but you have to endure. You have to finish. Galatians 5 and verse 7 says, ye did run well. Who did hinder ye that ye should not obey the truth? So sometimes, as we're identifying these weights, it might be a who. There may be people in your life that hinder you from running the race. You know, it's not a sin in itself to have friends. It's not a sin in itself to have family. If you place the improper importance on those things, or get them loaded in the wrong spot on the airplane or whatever, you will fail. And I think that's what sometimes we say, well, you know, it's not a sin. And then it affects how we run. in this particular, it says who. So in our lives, we need to consider who. Who has a negative impact on our ability to be the Christians we need to be? Philippians 3 and verse 13 says, "Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus." You see, hanging on to the past or not pressing forward, that's just what we can't do. It says, forget the things that are behind. One of the things that I really think about here is the guilt of sin that impacts the way we move forward. We've all sinned. We need to realize forgiveness and look forward. Because if your past sins impact the way you strive, the way you run the race, then it's a weight we just don't need. It's a weight we shouldn't have. As Christians, we are forgiven. We need to realize that forgiveness. We need to focus on the good prize. Focus on the good. You know, the Bible tells us to think on the things that are good. I want to tell you that I personally have a problem with seeing things in a negative way. I don't know that that's conducive to being a really good runner running in this race that we have Christianity, we call Christianity. We need to be successful in that. So focus on the prize and realize and embrace your forgiveness. Acts 8 and verse 36 says, "And as they went on their way, they came into a certain water, and the eunuch said, 'See, here is water. What doth hinder me to be baptized?' So the eunuch says, 'Here's some water.' He's been taught, 'What does hinder me? There's something, what's holding me back? Is there something?' And Philip said, 'If thou believest with all thine heart, thou mayest.' And he answered and said, 'I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God.'" So the question now is, does your belief hinder you? Does your level of belief or lack thereof hinder you in some way? You know, Philip said, if you believe, you can. So he answered the question, if you believe, you can. You'd say, well, hey, I believe. Well, I got a question. Do you fear? Does fear hold you back in something? 2 Timothy 1 and verse 7 says, "For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of sound mind." See, God don't want us to fear the world. I think a lot about, since I have this grandbaby and another one on the way, I think, what kind of world will they live in? And I fear or worry about that. I think that might hinder me. It might hinder my family. You know, a lot of times when we go out and preach the gospel, we don't necessarily preach about the good prize as much as we preach, you're going to hell. Okay? So we preach the fear. I'm not saying that's all bad. But we need to be careful that we don't live in fear. We can't run the race. That's a weight. Fear is a heavy thing. We need to avoid the fear. See, God has equipped us to win the race. Some of you know who this is. This is Usain Bolt, the fastest human ever to live that we're aware of. There's not much extra weight there. Matter of fact, I don't really see any. As Christians, God has equipped us to be this guy. We're able. Not only are we able, God has equipped us to be really good, to finish, to win. You know, training and discipline allow us to be fit enough to finish the race and to be successful when we do that and receive the reward. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 24 through 27. "Know ye not that they which run in the race run all, but one receiveth the prize, so run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as certainly, uncertainly. So fight I, not as one that beateth the air. But I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest by any means when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway." So run that ye may obtain. See, it's just not good enough just to run. You have to have a purpose to run. And keep that in your forethought. I'm running to win. Because to come in second place is just losing. You have to win. It says, strive. Really, strive. So you work. You don't just run. You don't just have that vision, but you work. And then you're temperate in all things. Okay, that goes back to that weight. To make good judgments. You know, when we went to Cancun recently and Christy's suitcase weighed 62 pounds. You know, they charge you over 50. Well, you look through that and it's hard to decide what you're going to leave and what you're going to take. So we didn't leave anything. We just threw a bunch in my suitcase and left a bunch in hers. And we get there and mine is overweight and hers is okay. Well, Cancun might be a little humid. I can tell you it's a lot humid. Did you know your clothes soak up humidity? You may gain 8 pounds or something in a suitcase just from water weight. So coming back, we were overweight again. And you look at them suitcases kind of like I do in my life and you think, what's necessary? What am I going to allow myself to be penalized for? Am I just going to keep adding things? Maybe I'll need it. Maybe I don't. Maybe I love this a little too much. See, and then we have to be efficient in our race. Don't beat the air, it says. I've got a little track experience, and I can tell you that those distance runners, they're really efficient with their arms. And he's talking about beating the air here. Have you ever seen somebody who's maybe a sprinter or something, and at the very last, when their form starts to break down, their arms, and they start flailing. They're not efficient, and they are getting beat. Distance runners, they hold a tennis ball in their hand so they don't get tensed up. There's a way to go about things. There's an efficient way to do things, and we need to be sure that we're going about it the way God would have us to. And it says that we're going to bring our body in subjection. Temperance. Understand what's the right thing to do and doing it. Subjecting your body or being Lord over your own body, being Lord of your life, letting Jesus be Lord of your life so that you have your priorities right. Not adding the weight that would hinder you. Uh-oh. Maybe that's us. Maybe that's you. I'm no offense, that's not you. I wonder if this guy just woke up like this one day. Or is he more like me and over time just kind of let himself get further and further out of shape? Till finally, he still calls himself a sprinter. You know, as a Christian, if you're not productive and you're worried, unstudied, your prayer life's not what it ought to be, you're fearful of the world, you're chasing money, we could go on and on and on. Truth is, you don't have a chance. You've got to change those things. You've got just about as much chance of finishing the race as this guy does of winning the sprint. We have to shed that weight. You know, Usain Bolt, the picture before, I guess that's as big a contrast as I could draw. You've got one guy that's prepared for the race that's before him. You've got another guy that just says, hey, I'm a sprinter. You can't tell by looking. You can't tell by his actions. Matter of fact, he can call himself a sprinter, but he's not. Are we that way when we call ourselves Christians? Can you tell by looking? Can you tell by our actions? Or are we just saying, hey, I'm a Christian. He's a sprinter. Matthew 10 and verse 37 said, he that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he that taketh not his cross and followeth after me is not worthy of me. So you can't run and finish and get the reward if you don't properly train, if you don't discern what needs to be in your life and what don't. Luke 9, verse 59, we'll start reading there. And he said unto another, follow me. But he said, Lord, suffer me first to go and bury my father. Jesus said unto him, let the dead bury their dead, but go thou and preach the kingdom of God. And another also said, Lord, I will follow thee, but let me first go bid them farewell, which are at home at my house. And Jesus said unto him, no man having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. So all these excuses, you know, I've got a lot of excuses. First off, I like chocolate. Second off, Christy don't always buy the healthiest things. Third, you know, you got to eat out a lot. I got to take people out to eat. So I just keep stacking on weight and stacking on weight. There's a lot of excuses. You know, at work, this oil field deal's got really competitive. And we've had to lower our prices to the point that it's nearly impossible to make money. So I meet with these drivers over and over, and we try to evaluate how productive they are for every hour they work. And there's 10 or 12 of them, and 3 or 4 are always really good. 3 or 4 are usually mediocre, and then you have 3 or 4 that are just bad every time. So you bring it up, and in every case, well, you know, my equipment's not as good. Well, I got lost. That map you gave me is not very good. And it never fails. The same group fails to perform. The good group always performs, and don't make excuses. See, excuses are for losers, and we have no room for excuses because we can't afford to lose this race. The punishment for losing this race is not something we can deal with. We have to win. I get kind of tickled sometimes because I used to play a lot of golf, and you'll see a golfer, and he's got a putt maybe this long, which I think those professional golfers probably make 99% of them, and they miss. And boy, they step back, and they look at it, and then they go and they pick a spike mark or something off the ground. That must have been what it was. What moved the ball. It couldn't have been that I've missed. There's always some excuse, isn't there? Truth is, sometimes you miss and you come up short, and you need to understand that that's not a quitting time. That's time to go to work. 1 John 2 and verse 15 says, "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, and the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world." Do you remember that word beset, surrounded by? I think this really describes what we live in and how we try to live our lives. Surrounded by the world. We live in the world, we're not part of it. You've heard that? Sometimes it's hard to draw that line, isn't it? So, I think this is more me. I just stack the world all over me. I'm not sure that's not a kayak, Matt. I'm not positive. We just stack more and more of the world on us and think we're going to keep running and winning. You might still be running. If you stack that much on you, if you stack more than you can handle, and anything is more than you can handle, you fail. You cannot endure. You may run for a while. You know, if the race is 4 laps and you make it 2, you still lose. If you make it 3 laps, you still lose. You have to finish the race the way God prescribed it. We can't just keep adding stuff. The Bible tells us to be away from the world, clean from the world. Don't add those things. Now, by contrast, here's a guy, and the caption on this picture when I looked up simply said, "World's greatest distance runner." Look at all that stuff he's carrying. Well, he's equipped. He's got his shoes. He's not carrying any extra baggage because he knows. Matter of fact, I bet you sometime in his life he's failed and he learned from it. There's nothing extra about this. World's greatest distance runner. 1 Corinthians 13, I'll start reading there in verse 1. "Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not charity, I am become as sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not charity, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things." So let's talk about love just a little bit. It says that it suffers long. Well, you know, If you're training for a race, there's going to be some pain involved. And the more you can push through that pain, the better shape you're going to be to finish the race. Well, in a Christian sense, we need love to do that, to get through some of the pain, to keep pushing. It says it vaunteth not itself. It's not proud of itself. It's not promoting itself. Love don't do that. And you know, you see these athletes that are really high on their self, and nearly, I shouldn't say nearly, basically in every case, they have a big fall coming. They're not humble. It nearly always happens. It says not easily provoked. And I think about some of the boxing matches and things like that where they taunt one another because one guy has a plan of how to win. And the only hope the other guy has is to taunt him enough that he abandons the plan to win because he's mad or he's provoked into leaving the plan to doing something that he shouldn't be doing. And then he gets beat. So see, love keeps us from being easily provoked. Then in the bottom there says, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Basically, I think that's the heart of a champion. When you find those things in a Christian, you find somebody that's going to get the reward. See, love is not heavy. It's light. I'm going to say it weighs nothing. Matter of fact, it helps us bear the weight of other things. So you're going to have some things. We live in the world. There are going to be some things that would be heavy to us. We need love to compensate for that. See, love endures. We have to endure to the end. And love hopes. You know, it's hard to run a race if you know there's no finish. We have to see the finish. When I was in college and I ran a quarter, I just thought if I could ever get around that last turn and see the finish line, I could make it. It wasn't always pleasant. But you needed to see the finish. I just could not imagine running that 1,500 or the 5,000 or what. No way. Because you have to run around that track more than once to see the finish line. I'd rather run 60 than a mile. I want to see the finish line. You know, I've kind of lived my life that way. I like this quick gratification thing. But you need to see the finish. And it motivates you to keep going. Hebrews 5 and verse 14 says, but strong meat belong to them that are of full age, even those who by reason of use of their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. You know, Zane read a passage, and I'll get to it here in a little bit, a few weeks ago, that reminded me of this. It talks about those who are more mature, let's say, who have exercised their senses. They've been training. They're able to discern good and evil so that they make better decisions. They're temperate. They know where to put the weight. They know what to shuck off. They know what we don't need because they've trained. And I think the Bible encourages us to train and learn those things. You know, I started an exercise program a while back. I have to say that because you wouldn't know by looking. So I just tell you, I started an exercise program a while back. One thing I learned is you can identify your weaknesses pretty quick. I would like to say I identified some strengths. You can get in such bad shape there's none left. You know, warmed up and wore out can get so close together you can't tell the difference. So just skip the warm up. So I guess what I've done now is I've decided, you know, let's just dive right into it. If we're going to play basketball or whatever, there's no time for warm up because there's no hope. Warmed up, wore out, we're done. We don't want to get to be like that sprinter to where over time, it sneaks up on us, the little bitty things that we let sneak into our lives to the point that all of a sudden we can't function. This exercise helps us to discern those things. John 8 and verse 3, we'll start reading there. It says, and the scribes and Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery, and when they had set her in the midst, they say unto him, Master, this woman was taken in adultery in the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned, but what sayest thou? This they said, tempting him, that they might have to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down and with his finger wrote on the ground as though he heard them not. So when they continued to ask him, he lifted himself and said unto them, He that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her. And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. And they which heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, went out one by one, beginning at the eldest, even unto the last, and Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. When Jesus had lifted up himself and saw none but the woman, he said unto her, Woman, where are those thine accusers? Hath no man condemned thee? She said, No man, Lord. And Jesus said unto her, Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more. Now when Zane read this, it struck me that the oldest got up and left first. In light of what we just read about this exercise and learning to discern good and evil, it's my opinion that the older realized, hey, we can't do this. They realized their sin sooner because they developed a conscience. They exercised it to the point they thought, you know, we can't do it. The Bible don't say that this woman was sinless. Matter of fact, it was there. I think about when I was younger, maybe, let's say high school, right before I got married, maybe before we had kids, I was really good at raising other people's kids. What they should do, when they should do it, and how they should do it. I'm a little older now. I may still think a lot of the same things, but I have got enough judgment not to say it sometimes. The truth is, as we get older, we're more attuned to our own failings. We understand our weaknesses. We understand we have to train ourselves to overcome our weaknesses. So you're not looking so much outward as you are inward. And I think that's what we find here in this passage. These older people who were going to condemn this woman, when Jesus pointed out some, they heard Jesus' words. We need to do the same thing and consider our lives. And those that were older were more ready to do that, more able to do that, and they left. I think about my grandmother, and you may think about your grandmother, your parents, grandparents, and the advice that they would give you as you was growing up. Some of it seemed really far-fetched. You know, my grandmother, about the only thing she seemed to worry about was if I would marry a girl from the church. I heard it. It didn't register on me to be near as important as it was to her. Maybe she knew something. I want to tell you she did. She had exercised her spiritual, her Christianity. She had run the race. She had trained enough to understand and have a good perception of what was important and what wasn't. Where to put the weight, what to get rid of. And she didn't want me to be adding weight that we didn't need to add. Because the Bible says get rid of it. Matter of fact, I guess she's just coaching me. Matthew 24 and verse 13 says, But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. So we think about the weight. We think about being weighted down. We think about endurance. We have to make it to the end. That means you cannot have the extra weight. James 1 and verse 12 says, Blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. You know, as we run this race, we will be tempted. It's going to be hard. You're going to have those times when you can't get a breath, when you're cramping up. However you want to look at that, it's going to be rough. But there's a finish line, and there's a goal, and there's a reward. And we need to focus on those things and keep running and enduring. You know, before and after, I guess, is a good way to look at that. The Bible tells us where we are before and what we need to be. Ephesians 4 and verse 21 start reading there. It says, if so be that ye have heard him and have been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus, that ye put off concerning the former conversation the old man which is corrupt according to the deceitful lust, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind. And then ye put on the new man which is after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. Wherefore, putting away lying, speak every man truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. Be ye angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. And grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, whereby you are sealed into the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake has forgiven you. So we have this before and after picture. And I want to ask you today, in light of what we just read, where are we? Where are you? Are we heaping the things of the world on us and hoping we can finish? Well, we're not going to finish. The devil's too powerful. He's too big of an opponent. We can't have the extra weight. It just don't work. All these things, says, get away from. Now, these are things that we would identify as sin. Let me tell you that the weight that besets us and the sin. There are things that we just don't need in our lives. Now, okay, they're not a sin in themselves, but they lend themselves to us being in a situation that we can't handle. I think about TV, which there's a lot of preaching about TV, but I think about that. You know, we all got them. I think about certain family members or some poor people whose family would work against them in Christianity. I think about being covetous, just wanting more and more and more. I think about fear and worry. Things that we think, you know, just a little bit won't hurt. Just a little bit is healthy. This little bit's okay, and a little bit's not okay. They're all unhealthy, and they cause us to fail.